MediTalk with Dr. Ross Walker.
Dr. Ross Walker joins me on the telephone this afternoon. Hello, Ross. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Brent. Yourself?
I'm busy, mate. I've just been doing other stuff, multitasking. See, men can multitask, Ross. Are you aware of that?
Do you know that no one can multitask? It's called sequential processing.
Oh, sorry.
Basically, what you do is you put things in your head in important order of importance. So the most important thing goes first, and then no one can do anything more than one thing at once, even though people think they can. You can't do it properly. So you can't watch television and do a Sudoku. You're doing one thing and maybe looking peripherally at the other thing. And so, no, we don't multitask, men or women.
Truly?
Yeah, sequential processing. So we still can do quite a few things at once.
Yes.
But you still have to focus on the most important thing that you're doing at the time.
There you go, sequential processing.
Yep.
I've got an email from Sean. Sean says, good afternoon, Brent. Good afternoon, Sean. Some weeks ago, I sent an email to you and asked Dr. Walker about a new lipid-lowering drug called, is it Repatha?
Repatha, yep.
Repatha.
Yep.
It has worked very well for me,
yep.
Dramatically reducing my cholesterol, triglycerides, yep. And has reversed my HDL and LDL ratio.
Yep.
This is good news your listeners need to hear about.
Yep. What we're talking about here are these drugs called monoclonal antibodies. Repatha is one of them. And the monoclonal antibodies are what we call PCSK9 inhibitors. Now, just to make this as simple as possible, on the surface of your liver cells are these things called LDL receptors. Now, LDL is allegedly the bad cholesterol. And if you've got a lot of LDL receptors, basically what happens is it just soaks up cholesterol, metabolizes it, and that's good. If you've got a problem with your cholesterol, there's typically a problem with the production of these LDL receptors or the breakdown of them, and the PCSK9 accelerates the breakdown of LDL receptors, and so therefore you don't incorporate as much cholesterol into your liver and it spills into your bloodstream. So a PCSK9 inhibitor, which is, mind you, my friend, an injection once a fortnight, so we're not talking about just swallowing a pill every day, what that does is markedly improve the take-up of cholesterol by the liver cells, and that's how it works. But the problem is that, firstly, it's an incredibly expensive treatment. You have to fit the government criteria, which is a pretty rigid criteria. So just say you're somebody in your 50s or 60s, your cholesterol's a bit high, you don't do that well on statins, I want to go onto this Repatha stuff. You're not going to get it. The government won't give it to you. You have to have proven heart disease, a proven cholesterol level over a certain level, and a proven intolerance to statin drugs. So there's quite a few criteria you have to match before you get the Repatha. But as Sean says, it is a highly effective treatment that can absolutely pulverize your cholesterol down to very low levels. And just on that, and this is just interesting stuff for the relatively near future, there's a new treatment called inclisiran, which is not a monoclonal antibody. It works on what we call the small RNA molecules in the liver. And this is an injection, wait for this one, every 6 months that does exactly the same thing as the Repatha, but you only have the shot every 6 months. That's being trialled at the moment and will probably be available to the public in about 2 or 3 years' time. For people who can't tolerate statins, which in my clinical practice is probably up to 10% of the population, so it's drugs like Crestor and Lipitor and those sort of drugs, there's a new oral drug coming out over the next 2 or 3 years called bempedoic acid. And bempedoic acid works a little bit beyond the statin pathways, but tends to lower cholesterol, not as well, but pretty much as well as statin drugs as well. And so, and there's something you and I have spoken about over the years. There's a treatment, there's a thing called lipoprotein little a, which causes 1 in 5 cases of heart disease. So when you hear about the 55-year-old man who drops dead of heart disease or has a severe heart attack and needs a stent, and his cholesterol's normal, his blood pressure's normal, never smoked, not diabetic, but a bit of a family history, typically they have a high LP little a. And up to now, we haven't had a lot we can do for that. I do a few things for it, but there's not really any standardized treatment for a high lipoprotein little a. There's a new injection coming out in the next 2 or 3 years that you have once a month that pulverizes LP little a. So what I'm saying is the future looks pretty bright for the management of all these things, and I actually believe that one of the big things that's going to happen down the track in the next 3 or 4 years, the technology's already starting, is the micropatch technology for vaccinations, for maybe a fortnightly injection for the treatment of diabetes, where you just put this patch on your arm rather than have an injection, and the patch does the same thing as an injection.
Do you mind me talking about your... No? Bree, who is helping me now, yep. She is a diabetic.
Yep.
And she has recently been able to get the... I won't call it a patch, but it goes into her arm and yep. it lasts for about 2 weeks.
That's called the Libre Freestyle Monitor.
The Libre Freestyle Monitor.
Yeah.
That's what she's got. Yeah, she's nodding her head. Yeah, that's what she's got.
Basically, what you do is you put your smartphone over it or something like that.
That's right, yeah.
And it tells you what your real-time sugar level is. But what I'm talking about goes even a little bit beyond that, where you will have a patch you put on your arm that will monitor your real-time blood sugar like the Libre monitor does,
yes.
but then deliver doses of insulin through the same process. So there'll be the management of diabetes in the next few years will become completely needleless.
Wow.
I think it's exciting stuff for all diabetics listening, so there won't be any more pricking your fingers or giving yourself injections into the tummy with insulin. It'll all be done through patch technology.
She's excited about that, let me tell you.
Well, she should be. Pretty exciting stuff.
Okay. And I've got one from Bob. Bob says, question for Dr. Ross. Should all smokers, is it a spirometry test?
Yeah.
Should all smokers have a spirometry test to find out the condition of their lungs, e.g. to see if they have COPD? Cheers, Bob. You should first start by telling us what a spirometry test is.
Okay, firstly, and I'll start by saying all smokers should not be smoking. That's
yes.
the first point.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, true. Still... 13% of the population are smoking of the adult population, and come the revolution I'm running the show, it will be banned. No one should be allowed to smoke, and people say, hang on a minute, Doc, you can't take away my civil liberties. Well, I'm not talking about just your civil liberties. I'm talking about the civil liberties of people who love you. Why should they have to sit in a church looking at your coffin because you've killed yourself prematurely? So everyone should stop smoking. I know it's not easy. I know it's an addiction. I know you have this intense craving, but we now have nicotine replacement therapy, e-cigarettes, which I don't support e-cigarettes, but e-cigarettes are certainly better than smoking. So everyone should be getting off smoking. Should you have assessments to see how much the cigarettes have affected your lungs before you stop? By all means do so. So a spirometry test is where you blow into this machine. So basically you try to force out as much air out of your lungs as you can, and we measure how much lung volume you have based on that test. And it gives you a good indication, but it doesn't mean that you can have that test and it's pretty normal and say, well, there's nothing wrong with my lungs. You have to be smoking for 20 years, about 20 cigarettes a day, before you'll even start to notice changes on that, whereas high-powered respiratory physicians can do much more extensive lung tests where they can pick up years and years before a spirometry test whether you've actually got some early cigarette-induced damage, and everyone gets it. So... What I've found always disturbing, Brent, is the smoker that goes on and has a chest X-ray, and the chest X-ray report comes back normal. They go, oh, see, there's nothing wrong with my lungs, I'll just keep smoking.
Right.
That is complete and utter nonsense. So the chest X-ray tells you nothing about how much damage you're doing to the small lung sacs you've got. The spirometry tells you that you've got pretty advanced disease, that you've gone well beyond the time you should be thinking about giving up smoking, because the time anyone should be thinking about giving up smoking is the second they even think about doing it in the first place.
If you take up smoking,
yep.
and you smoke for 10, 20 years,
yep.
you decide to give up.
Yep.
So you give up smoking.
Yep.
You've been an average smoker.
Yep.
Maybe 10, 15 cigarettes a day.
Yep.
How long before your lungs recover?
Oh, they never get back to normal, but you can recover about 5 to 10% of function. But mind you, you need to knock off about 60 to 70% of your lungs before you start getting short of breath. Because the body has enormous reserve for lungs, for the brain, for the heart, for the kidneys, for the liver. So there's enormous reserve built into all of our organs to cope with damage. But the point is, why do it? For anyone listening who smokes, let me just tell you something. It's a little secret. So you can share it with your friends. I'm happy to do this. The lungs were designed for a thing called breathing, not to put a white stick in your mouth and suck the damn smoke in. So you, and if anyone's listening who wants to prevent cancers, for any organ in the body, use the organ for what it was designed for. The lungs, breathing.
You sound like a doctor that used to be a family friend of my mother and father's, and he was a Seventh-day Adventist.
Yep.
And he was the family doctor, and I, like a silly, 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 silly young lad, started smoking at a young age.
Yep.
I call it peer pressure.
Yep.
And he was always on me to give up smoking. Anyway, on the 26th of January at 8:36, 1990... I had my final cigarette.
Thank God for that.
And I have never had another cigarette since.
Good.
But in the following weeks and months, I remember going to him and saying, if you can't make me feel better, I'm going to take up smoking again because I feel terrible.
Mm.
And yep. He said, just persist. It will get better.
Yep.
And I did, and it did. You've just got to get over that.
Yep.
That hurdle, that horrible hurdle, before you can have that clear paddock in front of you.
Look, mate, as everyone knows who listens to this, I had my knee replaced 5 months ago, and I was on heavy narcotics for about 5 or 6 weeks after it. And as being a doctor and knowing full well the addictive potential of narcotics, I wanted to get off them. So, and my GP kept saying to me, look, Ross, you're one of the only patients I have who wants to get off these drugs, doesn't want more for them. I've still got a sort of quite a few unused packets at home that I've got to throw out. But the point I'm making for this, when I stopped the narcotics, so I got after them after 5 or 6 weeks, I didn't feel good, the withdrawal wasn't pleasant, and it's the same thing with nicotine. You come off nicotine, the withdrawal is not pleasant. But getting off them is the best thing you can do for your health.
Yeah, good advice. Okay, we've got to take a break. We're talking to Dr. Ross Walker. It's a Tuesday afternoon. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back and continue our conversation.